Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we're cool dudes who drink drinks. Today on System Mastery, we're recording Snarf Quest D20, a Larry Elborg game featuring a Zitva or something? I don't know. He kind of just looks like a bat-eared kobold. It's an RPG using the D20 license based on a 1980s Dragon magazine comic strip, and it couldn't be wordier. We'll see you on the other side with System Mastery. And welcome back, John. It's me, Jeff.
Oh, no.
How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, good. I didn't know if you knew it was me or not.
How could I tell?
Yeah, I don't know if you...
I mean, you are wearing that full body cloak.
The moment you said you are wearing, I was like, well, I better look down because I do not look at my shirts when I dress in the morning. I just have three stacks of folded shirts and I use them up.
And indeed, they go upon me.
And I was like, oh, God, what am I wearing? Is it self-identifying? No, it's that Target.
Yeah, it's that shirt you have that says Jeff on it.
I do have two of those. But unfortunately, it's Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff.
And Jeffrey, yes. But no, I looked down, and this is not an identifying shirt. This is that same Target Captain America shirt that's on one-third of all nerds right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, you doing good?
That's great.
That's nice to hear.
It's good to be... in a place that is less warm than the place that I live.
That's true. It's nice and cool in my house. I haven't even pulled out our air conditioner from the garage yet.
Ooh.
Oh, but I might. Would you like to borrow it, by the way?
Oh, man, I would love that.
Keep in mind, it will raise your power rates insanely.
Oh, yeah.
And your landlords are going to notice.
Oh, I know they'll notice.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, here's $100. And I'll just take a $100 bill and like fold it and shove it into their pocket.
Like either of them ever wears anything that has a chest pocket on it.
Just shove it down the collar of their shirt. Here you go.
Tap, tap, tap. It's all sticking because they're sweaty.
Buy yourself something nice.
Like an air conditioner. No, stay out of my room. So what we're doing this week, John, is Snarf Quest.
Oh, yeah. Now, for the listeners that do not know what Snarf Quest is, and I assume that's anyone who isn't like
a gray
50.
Beard. Yeah. If you have less than a 3-hectare beard, you don't know what this is, probably. I mean, you're probably thinking right now that it's got something to do with the Thundercats.
Oh, yeah. Or, you know, if you're of that generation, if you're even younger, then you're like, what, Snarf Quest? What are you, snarfing shit with, with these
snarfing
hogs?
Down two hog shit with these two fuck faces. And I'm the biggest hog shit snarfer of them all.
So Snarf Quest began as a comic that was running in Dragon magazine like way back in the 80s.
Like in the inauguration of Dragon magazine. This started with Dragon magazine.
So Larry Elmore is the one who did that, and mm-hmm. It was just sort of like a weekly comic strip, but it went into a Dragon magazine instead of the newspaper.
Yes, exactly. And he put a couple, which meant that it could be kind of outsider comic size. It's like, usually it's a 9 to 12 panel strip, tells a consistent story. You know these things, because they still, well, up until now, up until my most recent association with Dragon magazine, it still had these, I don't know what's going on with Dragon these days, I'll be honest. But, I mean, you've seen these before because of shit like Knights of the Dinner Table or Nodwick or Dork Tower.
Yeah, stuff like that sort of replaced Snarf Quest once that ended, because I think that ended, like,
83. And then there were a couple of, like, graphic novels and stuff where they went to space or went through time and things.
Yeah, they had a few more little adventures, but this was, like, just a fairly quick run of whatever.
A good 3 years, about 40 individual story arcs, and then it actually wrapped up and ended. And then they kind of just had some victory lap extra stuff later on that you could buy if you wanted. Larry Elmore might be a familiar name to you, too, especially if you were of the era where you had, like, a second edition Player's Handbook.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever seen, when you flip open that second edition Player's Handbook and there's that great picture of an adventuring party that's recently captured, like, a little dragony dog.
A little dragony
dog. I mean, yeah, sure, it's technically a green dragon, but come on, it looks like they just put it in a sack and put it in the dryer to kill it. It's not. It's just not that imposing looking.
I mean, fair.
I mean, granted, the thing is still a dragon, so it can like cast spells and shoot fire at them and whatever green dragons do. I think that's poison clouds, actually.
Yes.
So it was probably quite dangerous, but still, it's the size of a big dog, and they've got it hanging from a tree, and they're all, it's like six of these people, and they're all like, look what we did. It's like, it took all six of you to kill a dog.
Oh, man, it was, it's like those pictures you take with, you're like, I got a huge fish.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
I'm like, look at the size of this dragon I bagged.
Yeah, but when you catch a huge fish and you're showing it off, you're like, hey, look at this. I caught this with a fishing line. And these guys are all like, yeah, we use these big swords and junk to catch this.
Yeah, but normally a fish doesn't breathe chlorine gas on you. So, you know.
I mean, it's one of my favorite pictures in that old book. Because it's the first one that really tells you what an adventuring party looks like. It's a bunch of people who are like, oh, yeah, we're low level and we're having fun. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about that particular picture, is that it tells you this party's like level 5.
Yeah.
Usually, everyone's fighting big damn super dragons and standing in their mouths like Tordek and what have you. And, but these guys are like, no, we're doing what a normal D&D adventuring party does. It's lame. We're lame.
I don't think you understand. We're goobers. I've got a dagger. I don't even know.
We're rampaging Tarrasques. Kree. We've given ourselves a team name.
Now, Snarf Quest, like we mentioned, sort of disappeared. I think like the last graphic novel was early 90s, maybe, that it came out.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a D20 open game license that came out in 2002,
mm-hmm.
which makes me feel like you may have missed your window here.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, everyone was getting their own OGL thing, so.
I know, and it is done by Larry Elmore, and it feels like he just went, oh, wait a minute, there's a thing, and I don't even need to do any work for it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, no problem. Oh, what do I need to actually do to justify for making myself an OGL licensed game? Wait, nothing? Are you sure? How many complete books of weapons are there officially in the OGL right now? Because I could do one of those. Oh, 44? Okay. Oh, well, you know what? I'll just bring my Snarf license back.
Yeah, it was just like, what do I own that I can put onto a book? Snarf? Great. Here we go. Here's Snarf Quest, the RPG book.
Let's snarf it up. Could you? I mean, imagine this thing hitting stores in 2002, and people are like, oh, finally, Snarf Quest.
Oh, I remember that.
It'd be like if a Mutt and Jeff role-playing game came out. Oh, finally, an OGL-licensed version of the Katzenjammer Kids.
It's not timely.
Guess what? We're going to finally figure out what character class Pogo is.
No, you're not.
The book starts out with straight up like 4 pages of Snarf Quest, the comic strip, so you can get a sense for what it was.
Yeah, it gives you pretty much the first 2 bits of Snarf Quest. Like, okay, you can just read through the first comics that came out.
So it's pretty succinct. Snarf Quest is the story of Snarf, who is not a kobold for legal purposes.
Yeah, Larry in the book is like, oh, when I was making stuff for this and I was working for TSR, I didn't want to possibly get in trouble with them by using anything that was theirs. So I could use, like, elves and dwarves and orcs if I wanted to, but I couldn't really throw anything else that was under their property, so I just made up crap.
Yeah, well, it also helps that his particular art style is pretty cartoony, and so he wasn't going to want to try and have to draw specifically what a second or first edition kobold looked like. Instead, he wanted to draw his own weird little monsters, so it all works out in his favor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he does say he really wished he could have used a beholder in some story, but
Who doesn't? Beholders are rad.
Yeah.
But if you stop it and stretch it out for a second there, one thing I want to talk about is the layout of this book, which is Larry Elmore writes stuff and then interrupts himself for Larry Elmore Says segments, where he draws a picture of himself saying things.
Yeah. Man, the stuff that comes out of Larry Elmore's mouth when he draws himself in here is just amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, it's almost like it should be the opposite of what it is. Like, it should be stupid hot take opinions, and then him popping up to be like, sorry, it was the 80s. But instead, it's him, you know, he'll be like,
it'll just be like rules text and stuff, and then he pops in and he's like, let me tell you my opinions about things.
And you're like, oh no, the opinions of an old man.
I mean, I'm
an old man, and I share my opinions regularly, but...
I know.
But we're talking a specific type of old beardo, like, shows up at conventions.
We're talking an old boomer here.
Yeah. So the comic strip, I guess we should talk about the first couple pages that we get to see of that.
Honestly, the beginning of this book is like when we... Anytime we've done any of the anime RPGs, and it starts out with, like, a blow-by-blow of every episode of the anime and letting you know, like, every detail of the characters, that is the beginning of this book.
Oh, yeah. Because there's 40, it's 40 sub-chapters for the 40 acts of the comic strip as it appeared in Dragon Magazine. And then one of Larry Elmore's drawings of himself being like, hey, and also if you really liked Starve Quest, it continued after that. Find my graphic novel where they go to space and meet even more exotic sex babes.
Yeah, the... I would say of a book that's like 120 pages, like 40 of it is just recounting what Snarf Quest was.
Uh-huh.
So,
which is probably important, because unless you have Dragon Magazine 80 to 83, you don't know.
Yeah, but unless you have read it, why are you buying Snarf Quest?
I mean,
because
I know why I bought it.
This book has one class, three feats, and like five new races?
It's got specifically five new races. So, okay, the comic strip, actually, I'm going to be honest here, I've always been a fan of Larry Elmore's art, and the comic strip's no exception. It's well done. It's good. It looks kind of like...
He's a very good, like, comic artist in that things are very expressive, mm-hmm. There's lots of goofity explosions and things like that.
Yeah, you get a lot of good eye work. It's like the best stuff from, like, a Carl Barks or from Mad Magazine in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's very expressive and very cartoony and very cool. The stories are also really interesting. Like, he does a great... His style of storytelling is, you know, pick an A point and a B point and then come up with the dumbest way possible to get from A to B, and that's your story.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And the one thing I would say I really didn't like would be the dialect.
Now, we have a difference of opinion here.
We do, and it's not like we have an answer to it, so it's fine.
But, like, pretty much anyone who isn't a wizard or a hot babe talks with an accent that we are of a differing opinion of what the actual accent is.
I could be brought over to your side. I'm pretty sure you could be brought over to mine. The important thing is just that he uses this eye dialect for everyone. And if it's everyone, why not do it? And the dialect specifically, it's kind of like when you remember, you ever read Zippy the Pinhead?
No. Why would I do that?
I don't know. It's like this, you're aware of it at all?
Oh, I know it. But yeah. Why would I read it?
There's this thing in Zippy the Pinhead where they don't say the, they say TH apostrophe.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, what the fuck is that supposed to be? Listen, Zippy the Pinhead author, you dipshit. How the fuck do you pronounce th? What is that? Who's talking like that? Ugh, I'm mad at you.
It's when you take that and put it into the next word. So you're like, what the hell?
Except they do it for every single word in the book, even if it's a hard consonant for the next start one. He'd be like, I'd like to suck the dick. And you're like, no, you can't. You should have. Those are two words. You got to stretch that. Anyway, in this book's case, though, it's D's instead of TH's.
Yeah. So it's a lot of, for me, I'm like, hey, if you got anything of value that you would like to have, let me see that.
And for me, I think it's Jar Jar Binks.
I know you think that. I don't know why.
Well,
probably because of the cartoon style.
Well, a lot of it's because our hero, Snarf the Zietva, looks like a Jar Jar. I mean, sure, he predates Jar Jar by 30 years or whatever, but he looks like a Jar Jar. I'm going to steal this gem from this guy right here. I mean, to me, it's just a stupider New Jersey accent, really.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I assumed Elmore grew up on the East Coast and he was like, oh, I'm just having this all be like dudes from fucking New Jersey and whatnot that are the voices I'm going for.
I didn't know where he was from. He specifically in the book says he's from the South. But my guess was that he's writing the way he thinks like Looney Tunes talked. Like, he's trying to do kind of a Bugs Bunny style and a Daffy Duck thing.
Yeah.
Where Bugs Bunny kind of does that. You got to get the sense that Bugs is from, you know, somewhere kind of tough.
The mean streets.
Yeah, he's from the mean dirt streets of, I don't know, Albuquerque or one of the other many comedic city states that
Walla
he mentions.
Walla.
Newport News. But yeah, so everyone talks like this, everyone. And it's kind of a problem because the whole thing is set in this place where he was like, oh, in my setting, you'll always just run into random weird looking monsters because that's easier to draw than having to keep a consistent type across things that you meet. But as I'm doing this OGL book, it's real easy for me to be like, oh, I drew a bird guy once. He's from a whole species of bird guys. So you end up with this problem where everyone he meets has the same dialect, even though it's like a sentient rat and a robot and leech monster and so on, and they all talk the same.
Yeah, that is one of the more annoying things. And it's weird because it, like I said, the wizards don't do this.
No.
Like, there are a couple wizards in the book, and all of them just speak regular.
Yes.
They've all just got, like, written out, no does or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, notably, it's a distinction, it's really obvious. If he draws them like normal humans, they have normal human accents for the most part.
But anyone who's cartoonish,
anyone who's a little cartoon, and not it's like the Roger Rabbit thing where like all the cartoons are like 4 feet tall for some reason.
Yeah,
like I've never understood why that was. I mean, I understand in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, it's because it's comedic and funny, but it's weird to think that Bugs Bunny is 3 feet tall and they have to create 3 foot tall sets for him to make sense in. if you're under 5 feet tall, you talk with this stupid New Jersey accent.
Yeah.
Which I think is true to life as well.
Oh, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think if you're around 5'1", you probably talk like you're from New Jersey.
Probably. You're probably real angry about bagels,
you
too.
You might be real. Well, he's angry in the vicinity of bagels.
Yeah, bagels make you angry.
So, anyway, that's the thing. The other thing about the comic style that we've kind of alluded to a little bit, and I know you're wondering when we're going to talk about the rules of this game. There's like four. Relax.
Yeah, it's D&D 3E. Go listen to our 3E episode.
We didn't know what we were getting into when we started with the book. The other thing about the comic that's interesting and that gets a long explanation.
Oh, I've got it open to the page. I am going to read it.
Is why all the women in the world of Snarf Quest are sexy human babes.
Now, this is a point where Larry Elmore draws himself in, shrugging, and saying this. Yep, almost all women are beautiful in Snarf's world. I think it is because I love them and see beauty in most all women. Sometimes the most beautiful woman is the most dangerous. I guess because I am a man. It is easier for me to tell what is inside a man's head. Therefore, I tend to exaggerate men more in their appearance in order to illustrate their inner character. A woman? Oh, any woman, especially a beautiful woman, can get one over on me anytime she wishes. I just can't help it. I guess I am just a sucker when it comes to women, and Snarf is for sure. There's a lot to unpack in there.
There's a lot to unpack. So first of all, one of the things I want to establish is that everyone in this universe is equally attracted to sexy human babes.
Oh, yeah.
If your species maxes out at 4 feet tall and has foot-long bat ears and a long aardvark snout, you're attracted to human women.
Yes. Everyone is attracted to hot babe human women.
Uh-huh. That's fair, because that's just how cartoons work.
Yeah.
But it's notable in this that there's only one female Snarf that you ever, like, he's technically a species of Zitva. There's only one female Zitva you ever see, which is Snarf's mom.
Yep.
And she's just drawn as a man Snarf in an apron, so
yeah.
Whatever. Every other woman you ever encounter is a sexy Larry Elmore-style pinup babe with a variety of Farrah Fawcett haircuts, but the exact same face.
Yep. The idea that he's like, oh, I just love women too much to not draw them all as pinup babes. Okay, that's bad.
It's not acceptable. It's not a good enough excuse.
But the worst thing is like, oh, I can tell what's going on in a man's head, so I'll actually draw them as individuals. Women, though, who knows what's going on in their head? They're all just babes. Look, women, I don't know what's going on in their head. They're probably sex objects. Here we go.
I mean, to me, it basically means he's saying, like, I respect 1% of women so much.
I respect them so much that I can't help but have them draw them with their boobs out.
And if they're not super sexy, then they're completely invisible to me. That's all I'm saying. And they're also invisible in the world of Snarf Quest.
That and his little take that, like, oh, women will get one over on you if you let them.
Yeah. Oh, the most beautiful woman is probably the most evil.
Now, in addition to that, because he kind of alludes to it. He basically ends up writing Snarf as himself.
Yes, he says that Snarf pretty much represents himself over and over again, because Snarf is supposed to be like an everyman. He had no business going on a big adventure anyway.
Yeah, and it's his reaction to most dangerous things is run away and try not to die.
Yes.
And he's like, oh yeah, after a while, when I first started, I didn't really think that it was going to happen, but he just became like me. And then, of course, the hot babe that he ended up with, over time, just became my wife.
Yeah, yeah, Teleri Windyarm, or Teleri, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
Who, it, just like most of the other women in this book, are like, oh, she's a sexy, badass, competent swordsman with no sense of modesty.
Yeah.
Boy, when she has to change armor, does Snarf ever get an eyeful?
Yep.
I mean, I guess, but he, again, he's like 3'8", so it's a weird eyeful. It's like seeing a naked statue. But he meets two women that are like that, and then a third one who is...
A valley girl?
A valley girl, as written in 1981.
Yes. Yeah, there's a sorceress that he meets,
mm-hmm,
that they have to go on a quest to get her wand back, and she's just a sexy babe.
Yeah.
There's the swordswoman we already talked about.
It's Atia, Teleri, and Penelope.
And Penelope,
yeah,
is a princess that they save the kingdom of, and she is a valley girl, and the rest of her family is exaggeratedly ugly.
Yes.
And then she's just a regular Elmore pinup girl.
Yeah, her family is basically gnome type things. They're like, I mean, they're supposed to be humans, but they're all like, I'm King Sniffly. I'm 4 feet tall and a mostly nose.
Yeah. And
this is my daughter, a statuesque 6'2" blonde babezilla.
Ugh.
And you're like, all right, I'm sure Danny DeVito did indeed have kids. Why not? But but yeah, it's just, it's kind of sad after a while. And it's weird because you would notice it if you were just reading the comic. If you're like, oh, this guy only draws sexy human babes.
It's especially weird when there are some shots of like crowds,
mm-hmm,
where they're like, oh, help us, there's an evil wizard. And you've got just like a group of different looking men, and then random hot chicks are in the crowd. You're like, draw anything else.
Yeah, he won't.
But that's one of the rules of the book, is all women are beautiful.
Yeah, women have to be hot. In fact, there's a special house rule they apply to the way you run, because part of this book is just house rules to stick on to third edition D&D.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them is maximum or minimum charisma. You either have to put your highest stat in charisma or your lowest stat in charisma, because I guess Elmore here is under the impression that charisma equals hotness.
Well, also because you have to either be a big doofus or a hot badass.
Yeah, yeah. Except the problem is that you run into characters like Penelope, who is both of those things. So does she have a high charisma or a low charisma? Because she's an annoying valley girl, but she's got big boobies.
Yeah, it's a choice that he has made.
I just, like I was going to say, I think the weirdest thing about to me is that I was fully prepared to accept it because I've watched Ralph Bakshi movies. I know what's coming. You're going to draw your women with big boobs because that's what sells. What I did not expect was the long kind of shrugging half apology for doing that.
Yeah.
That's what really called it out. When I saw it, I was like, oh, dude, that's a bad look.
Yeah. If they had just not even mentioned it.
Exactly. That's all
I'd have been like,
do.
All right, sure, I guess you're trying to get people to read your comic. But when he's like, no, I did this on purpose and I just can't help myself.
I mean, this is post Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He could have just shrugged it off like a Jessica and Roger thing, and everyone would have been like, yeah, okay, I know that archetype, it's fine. When a buxom super babe falls in love with a crazy rabbit, everyone's up to speed.
We all get it.
Yeah, it's fine. So the basic plot of the Snarf Quest storyline is that these Zitva things are little homebody-looking, aardvark-looking people.
Yeah.
Who normally like to stay in their little houses and live normal lives.
Yeah, they just stay. They have a valley,
mm-hmm,
that they all live in, and they're ruled over by a king, and basically nobody leaves. They all just hang out,
yes,
in this valley.
But if the king should die, then regents take over, or the wise men take over for a short time, while anyone who is willing to gets to leave the village, go on a quest, and whoever comes back with the most treasure and the best stories is hereby crowned the new king of the Zitva.
Yeah, you have a year to go out and get as much loot and nonsense as you can, and whoever comes back with the best is king. And they say that basically most people will be like, oh, I go out. Oh, okay, dude comes back like 2 days later and is like, nope, don't want to do it.
I don't like this. And some people never come back at all.
Yeah.
They mention when Snarf went out, there were three of them who stayed out for the full year. One of them was a bad guy who returned about the same time as Snarf and became one of the last challenges of the adventure. The third one is thought to have decided to stay because he met an attractive elf maiden.
Yes, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. By the way, this book uses opposite sex liberally.
Yeah. No, I mean, Snarf was written in
19. Well, I'm not saying Snarf uses op, because that's a comic strip from the 80s. This book from 2002, when that shit wasn't good anymore.
Larry Elmore, what I'm saying, is writing Snarf from 1980s perspective.
Yeah.
And that will continue.
That, yeah, he has not changed modes in the ensuing decades.
No.
So you get a lot of opposite sex referred to in things like, if you have this feat, you are automatically attracted to the opposite sex and they are automatically attracted to you. You can't use this on the same sex.
Yeah, gay people don't exist in Snarf Quest.
No,
it's fine.
It's the young world. The young lands had no gay people.
Ugh.
If it did, they would be horrible stereotypes. So I'm really glad it doesn't.
Yeah. Given that there's a stereotype of a nerd called... His last name is Dork with a Q-U.
Oh, yeah. Dork. He's just like Lieutenant Dork or something.
And he's just a big nerd with a huge nose, and he's like, ooh.
Yeah, he's basically like, I'm trying to remember the name of that character, the vulture character from Looney Tunes.
Oh, okay.
He basically has that kind of style kind of personality.
Yes.
Anyway, that's the story of what the comic strip is. Is Snarf goes out and has about a year's worth of adventures, and then returns and becomes the king of his own people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the book itself, once it gets past summarizing what the actual comic strip was, is mostly just GM advice and player advice on how to run a game in a comedic setting.
Well, yeah, and notably, the two are intermingled for a long time in the middle of the book. Because at first, it's like just 4 pages of this comic. Here you go. This is what Snarf Quest was, in case you were confused. Now, here's a breakdown, chapter by chapter, of all 40 chapters of Snarf Quest. And occasionally, there'll be a little DM note at the bottom that's like, here's a lesson you can learn from this chapter of Snarf Quest.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, the Snarf had a wish, but he accidentally wished to... like
for a mirror,
for someone to be able to see the look on their face, and a mirror appeared. You know, if a character does something and you want to fuck them over for it, do that. And I'm
by
like,
the,
wow.
By the way, that is all of the advice segments at the bottom of the chapters. I mean, he does know the difference between a serious and a comedy game, because he's like, in a serious game, your players shouldn't just be saying what their characters say, because that's dumb and it kind of ruins the seriousness of it. But in a comedy game, hold their feet to the fire. I think he doesn't realize what effect that normally has. If you tell players, like, by the way, anything you say your character says and I will use it against you, you've just ruined your comedy game because no one's going to fucking talk.
Yeah, the main issue I have with so much of the advice of, like, oh, if your characters get too powerful, make sure they trip over their own feet and go face first into a pile of dog shit.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of thing is... And I was thinking about it this weekend when I was... getting my notes together for this.
Sure.
There's a difference between comedy that is happening that you are writing for a character, which is basically what Larry Elmore was doing. I am creating a character and writing something comedic happening to that character,
mm-hmm.
and comedy that happens between a group of people.
Yes.
Because if you have full control, oh, it's funny to see a character pratfall or... all of the things he tries to do blows up in his face. You know, you can have a good laugh at this other thing's expense, but when you do it in a game where people are, you're having a laugh at one of your player's expense.
Yeah.
And that's going to make that player not have a good time.
I mean, I could see it working if you had a very, very intuit group that were all like, oh, we've been doing this for years and we know how this works and we're all good comedic players. Maybe that's even what makes a good AP group, but... the problem is that the way that he seems to describe comedy games is your players will try to take their game seriously and you won't let them.
Yeah.
He's like,
oh, if they try and find some magical item or whatever, take it away from them. But, you know, give them a consolation prize. Snarf lost his wish, but he got a bag of holding. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, no, that's basically one of the advice segments. A lot of them basically boil down to do things at your player's expense, because that's what comedy is. And you're like, I don't know if... I mean, I feel like you should be trusting the comedic sensibilities of your players more.
The other thing that it goes on is pretty much do that and then twist things around. Oh, is there a dragon? Make him really nice and meek. Or, oh, did you find a hot babe? Make her a badass warrior.
Oh, I hated that. That was a juxtaposition for him. A hot babe can't be a badass warrior. That's why it's weird that they are.
Yeah, that was my weird twist.
I was like, your biggest twist for this woman is that she's competent?
Yes.
That's a big twist?
Yes.
Ugh. Can't wait to see you at GaryCon.
Yeah, the comedic advice in this sometimes is like, oh, you know, try and make it so that, like, your quests aren't just A to B. Try and figure out dumb things to happen. Have characters show up that are just ridiculous and drag your players into ridiculous situations. You're like, okay, that's fine. Having the world be ridiculous is fine. But it's when the advice goes into fuck over your players because isn't that funny, that I go, no, it's only funny if it's a written medium and you're not actually doing it to a person.
Yeah, that's the problem with this book for me is, I can't stress this enough, Snarf Quest is really good. Like, Snarf Quest, the comic, I liked it a lot. The couple pages I read, I looked up some more of them online. I like it a great deal, especially compared to modern, like, I don't know what modern for but, like, I've tried to read Nodwick, Dork Tower. Dork Tower is... The Nadir. It's the bottom of the barrel. I mean, I'm sure John Kovalik is doing great for himself and make, is that, that this, I think that's Kovalik. Making plenty of money for himself off his, like, Shay Nerd card games and what have you.
But, all that Munchkin.
Yeah, doing the Munchkin stuff. But Dork Tower is just two indistinguishable thumb people being like, I got the newest game. I'm happy about that. Oh, our cats want to eat our plants. Okay, we'll see you in a week. But this is, like, well-drawn, well-executed. It's got great world-building. To me, Snarf Quest reminded me a lot of what I really like about, like, say, Asterix.
Yeah.
The Belgian comics I like so much because there's so much world-building and depth to the characters, and the art's got a strong, consistent vibe to it. But the idea that means here's some good DM advice is not working.
No, you can't just say, hey, if you want your game to be funny like my comic strip, just make it literally my comic strip.
Just be mean to your players a bunch, because I was basically mean to Snarf a bunch. And I'm like, but Snarf would be a player in that situation. And
also, a lot of it relies on Snarf doing what you would like him to in order for that to work. Because it's fine if you're like, oh, I screwed a dude over, but he runs away and then runs into something that'll reward him. But if you're like, oh, I made this adventure where he has to run away from a thing that's dangerous, but these are players, and they're just going to go, oh, you gave us an encounter and try to kill it. So
yeah.
It's... You really would have to just sit down with players and go, hey, I'm trying to run, like, literally the comic Snarf Quest,
mm-hmm.
and I need you all to act exactly like the characters from Snarf Quest.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of DM advice, the vast majority of which boils down to be mean to your players. Some of it is acceptable GM advice, but very simple. You know, it's things like, oh, just err on the side of funny. If you've given a tie choice, just make it a joke.
Yeah, I mean, there are some good things in there. Like, if someone comes up with an interesting idea, even if it's maybe dangerous or something like that, just have it work.
Yeah, that was smart. That's good DM advice, because that's the kind of thing that bogs down games a lot. And this episode's going to end up being a lot about D and GM advice. Because
oh, yeah, because there's no rules.
There's very little rules. But the kind of thing where you're like, I have played in games where I'm like, I have a crazy plan. And the DM's like, well, that plan's crazy, so it fails. Stupid.
Yeah.
You dumb fucking shit.
You'd never be able to do that. In fact, that's a DC 40 if you want to roll it.
You automatically try it and you take 4 damage because you're stupid.
Yeah, whereas I've played in games where I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do some wacky thing where I'm like, ah, this is stupid. Can it work? And my GM's response was always, yeah, it'll work once. Like, you can always, you can't just continue to do one stupid thing over and over again, but every new stupid thing you do can work once.
And that's another distinction that makes comedy RPGs difficult to accomplish. Now, this, to be fair, has very little comedy RPG built into it. Like, the stuff they add at the back of the book is pretty much straightforward stats for five new races and a useless new class. I mean, we're talking capital U useless. This thing gives the X-Crawl classes a run for its money on uselessness.
Oh, yeah. This is... The one class they put in here is, I'm going to say, the worst thing I've seen for third ed.
Yeah, it might be the worst third ed class. It's in the running. I mean, honestly, at this point, we should probably start a tally of the worst possible third edition classes, because we're just going to keep seeing them. So in this, or OGL classes, I guess we should say, this is, but in a lot of comedy games, like, say, Toon or Tales from Floating Vagabond, you run into this problem where your character is given a Toon superpower. Like, you're like, oh, you have hammer space. You can pull stuff out of your back pocket, and it's always, it's bigger than your back, but the thing is big. You can pull phone booths and stuff out of there. And you're like, well, great, I could use that to tell a joke. And then that joke. And then after that, I could tell that joke.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you have the power, it's like, oh, you always have cream pies available. And they'll, you know, if you hit with them, it makes a character fall down. You go, okay, but if that's the power I have,
mm-hmm.
then my character is constantly just throwing cream pies and it stops being funny.
Yeah, I mean, and it might loop back around to being funny at one point, but then it'll stop being funny again.
Yeah. You know, if you use it in a weird new way, then you're like, oh, good, you found a way to use your dumb power in a new way. But for most of the part of the game, you're just going to be like, all right, I guess I throw a pie at this dude.
And heaven help you if you've got one of those reactive powers. If you're like, oh, my character can get riddled with bullets and not die, so he's only funny in situations where someone shoots at him in a way that would have killed him, and it's funny because it didn't.
Yeah, and then he takes a drink and water pours out of the holes.
Yeah.
You get it?
Yeah, it's a joke, you see. It's just this problem that you run into when you're trying to design a comedy game based on using the rules of a regular role-playing game. Because regular role-playing games are always like, oh, structure. Here's some structure. Here's narrative, concrete blocks of information about your character that you assemble to form a stack that is your character. But comedy can't work that way. And the other problem you run into is, like we were talking about a second ago, comedy, if you're working with a group, needs to be collaborative?
Yeah.
Like, a lot?
Because if anyone's not in on the joke, if you've got four people playing, three of them are like, yeah, I've read Snarf Quest, I love the idea of this, I'm on board to get, like, thrown from the back of a, like, wagon all the time and have my foot get stuck in a hole and get bitten by a weird gopher, like, sure, I'm on board with that. And one of your players is like, oh yeah, I like comedy, that's great. And then starts happening to them and they're like, oh, this sucks, I hate this.
Yeah, it's an interesting balancing act, and it's hard to play a regular game in a comedic way, and it's hard to design a comedic game not doing it in a regular way. It's an interesting set of challenges. So you think we should maybe talk about the actual rules of the game here, like the stuff that was added to make this an OGL?
Yeah, I mean, I pulled up the one class that they have in this.
Oh, okay, you want to start with that?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, so the one thing they added was a class called the Noble.
Now, stop me if I'm wrong, John. Isn't there already a Noble in the third edition Player's Handbook?
I mean, technically, yes.
I mean, it's one of those NPC classes that, honestly, there was one of the problems with third edition was that all the NPCs had classes, which, why do you need to build them?
Oh, yeah, when you're like, what are you? I'm a level 2 peasant.
What? Why do you even have levels? What is that? It's so you know a cat would kill me. No! This game is unnecessarily complicated.
Yeah, now, the Noble is supposed to be someone that's like, oh, I've got money and connections.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's pretty much it. They do get a D8 for their hit die, so they're pretty sturdy.
Yeah, and they straight up steal an ability from the third edition Monk. They just change the stats around.
Yes.
What is it called again? You're looking at it right now. It's like savvy fighting or
Deceptive melee?
Deceptive melee, which is the ability to add your charisma modifier
to your AC.
To your unarmored AC at low levels.
Yes.
In addition to your dex modifier, which is what monks had that specifically. It was just they used wisdom instead of dex.
Yeah. Now with this, you get to upgrade it so that at 8th level you can wear light armor and still get your bonus, and at 17th you can wear medium armor and still get your bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, very few people wearing medium armor in third edition anyway, so but that is nice to know.
Yeah, it's just sort of a, at these two levels you get an AC bump.
Uh-huh.
Which is sort of okay. They get the leadership feat for free at level 6, and then a bonus to the leadership feat 3 more times.
Yeah, because this is the standard OGL model of class design, which is come up with 3 bonuses and put them at levels like 1, 3, and 5, and then repeat them with just like plus 1s for the rest of their career.
Yeah, so at level 20, you can get up to a plus 3 bonus on your leadership score.
Whatever, it just means you're filling the game with pointless NPCs that someone has to run.
Yes.
You. It's a bad feat. I mean, sure, people are going to tell me that leadership was a super powerful feat in 3rd edition, and that is true, but boy, is it ever bad for gameplay.
Yeah. Now, the only ability they get that actually matters is Silver Tongue, which at 12th level, they can roll a bluff check on someone, and the DC to not be bluffed is whatever their check was. They have to make a will saving throw.
Mm-hmm.
If they fail, then they think the noble's their friend.
Yes.
And
but isn't that just what bluff does?
I mean, basically, it's you cast friends on them for free without a duration.
So at 12th level, you get access to a first level spell?
Yes. But it's free and you can do it all the time.
Who wants to do that all the time? How often are you running into people who are like neutral towards you that you would like to befriend in a way that you can't just do it by rolling a diplomacy check at them?
Yeah. Now, of course, the the last ability they get, and definitely the worst one,
yes,
is available funds.
Mm-hmm.
Available funds.
Can you just tell me the level it starts at?
Level 2.
That's right.
Level 2, the noble starts receiving monthly sums of money from either banked wealth or an allowance.
Mm-hmm.
At level 2, you receive 25 gold per month.
Yeah, you get an allowance of 25 gold a month,
but
as
don't
an adventurer.
Worry, this goes up to 50 at 8th level, all the way up to 200 gold pieces a month at 17th level.
Oh, for Christ's sake. So this is a really telling ability. It tells you exactly what kind of campaigns Larry Elmore would normally expect people to run.
Yes.
Which is no one gets things. No one gets any gold. We're not playing by the rules of, like, because 3rd edition had an item treadmill.
Oh, yeah. Well, it didn't matter if you were going on a quest and you finished it. You're like, all right, we beat whatever. It has a treasure table. Mm-hmm. I guess we get that.
All right, well, I'm going to roll on the treasure table. It says here you got a bucket full of rusty spoons and a brief peek at the bosoms of an attractive maiden.
You found some weird metal horse. Oh, thanks.
Oh, great. It's out of gas, though, and gas won't be invented for 5,000 years. It's a wacky, zany fun time.
Yeah.
It's basically telling you you're going to be running a game where you shouldn't worry about the item treadmill, which is fine. I mean, no big deal. If no one is doing it, then you don't have to worry about balance levels or anything, as long as the monsters are equally stupid.
Yeah, the main issue with that is you go, all right, so you've got pretty much cleric progression for hit points and base hit,
yeah,
and you're will-based, so I think you also have the same save progression as a cleric.
And I believe you get 6 skill points plus int mod per level or whatever it is. So basically they have the early version of the bard's skill progression. Is that right?
I don't even see what skills they get.
Oh my god, please tell me I didn't imagine that this book was competent.
I think you may have.
In which case, we don't know how many skill points this class gets.
Nope, we sure don't.
Or do they have a table of skills that are selectable?
They have a select. These are class skills that they have.
Okay.
We do get that.
All right, but we don't get the number of skill points per level part.
I'm going to go ahead and assume it's cleric, because literally everything else that wasn't a made-up power is cleric.
Okay, fair enough. So then that pushes it to a 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a bad class. And, I mean, just imagine I'm a noble, and don't worry, guys, in 3 months I'll be able to afford a riding horse.
Yeah, it's very bad.
I guess because it's supposed to be part of a joke game for joke people, it's supposed to be, I guess it's a joke that they give you like 1/10 of the expected amount of gold that a 20th level or the second level adventurer has on him per month.
Yes. The noble bit comes up when he's talking about like, how should you play these classes in Snarf Quest?
Right.
So he's like, oh, you know, if you're a rogue or a fighter, you basically don't really need to change anything because that's going to be the same no matter what. But
yeah.
If you're a druid, you should act like this. And if you're a cleric, there aren't a lot of gods around. So you should probably have some weird god that you...
The cleric one
praise.
I liked. The cleric one was like, make up a weird cult, and you're a cleric of that cult, and no one else knows what cult that is. Also, just go pick two of the domains, and you have those two domains, you're welcome. And I thought that was actually pretty clever. Druid, on the other hand, was straight up a hamstring.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, druids, there are three kinds of druids in Snarf Quest, of the moon, of the tides, and of the stones, and all three of them have extremely strong, like, old-school druidic restrictions on when they can cast spells.
Yes.
Like, druids of the moon can only cast spells on full moons.
Yeah, it was real bad.
Yeah, so they were like, don't play this class, because it's broken now. We broke it.
And once it gets to Sorcerer and Wizard, Larry Elmore pops up again with a tip about magic. Don't let your wizards get too powerful. As they grow in power, the DM should keep them in check by creating problems so that every spell doesn't go off as expected. The magic user could slip and fall at the most critical time when casting a spell. Or the spell comes off too good and does too much damage. Thanks, Larry.
So, this is an important thing to talk about here as well when it comes to how to run a game. In D&D in particular, it has this real binary problem where you either hit or you don't, so either you do something on your turn or you don't.
Yes.
And there's no minimum damage, there's no automatic effect, except for wizards, who normally can be like, I magic missile, it happens, fuck you.
Or, I create a whatever, and
yeah.
It's there.
The idea that you should be like, oh, on a caprice, and not even on any kind of, like, roll or anything, be like, hey, your turn does nothing. All right, we'll see you again in 5 to 10 minutes when everyone else is done doing their turns.
Or, worse, oh, your spell goes off, but now it hits you, lol.
Haha, yep, that's your turn. It's a feels problem. Where you take enough narrative away agency away from your players that they're like not even contributing to the game really.
Well, I mean,
I guess they're contributing comedy, but you better hope they were on board for that.
At least Elmore, I believe, rightly understands that wizards at a certain point just become ridiculous in a D&D game, and he's like, that you can't really do anything about that. Like for a fighter or a rogue, you can put harder enemies or more difficult locks or whatever and try and challenge them that way. For a spellcaster,
they step outside the rules of the game, so it doesn't really matter what you throw at them.
Yeah, they since they don't have to interact with so many of the systems in the game, there's not really a good challenge threshold for it.
Mm-hmm.
And his idea to counter that is, oh, dumb things happen in Snarf Quest, so just make your wizards occasionally fail.
Yeah. Yeah, like there's, and that shows up in a lot of different game designs. Like I always think about back when I was playing 40K a lot. You remember John, the 40K days?
Of course I remember the 40K days.
And they introduced, while we were playing, the Chaos Demon Army became kind of a thing. And they just didn't use 3/4 of the rules of the game.
Oh yeah, they're like, oh, nothing about morale works and
psychic powers don't affect us and blah, blah, blah.
And they don't deploy the same way as anyone else.
All of them only have invulnerability saves, so you get your AP weapons don't do anything.
Yeah, they just sort of ignored so many of the rules of the game that you're like, this isn't fun, because even if I win, nothing I'm doing is, like, I can't make a choice that matters.
Basically, what they said was, if you're playing against them, you should build an army that has the least tricks possible in favor for just more guns.
More stuff.
More guns, because none of your cool tricks do anything. And so the only way to play against them is the least fun way.
Yeah.
And that's
make the most basic vanilla nonsense you can.
Uh-huh.
And there you go.
And you know, they've fixed them over the years. And that's a problem you run into with Wizards and D&D is they ignore so much of the elements of what make D&D D&D. They just go, I cast a spell that changes the universe and fuck it. Whatever I want happens.
I grab narrative control from you for a minute. Thanks.
Yeah. Now, in this one case, I'm kind of on Larry's side because this is like a 50-page OGL fluff book about a snarf. like, this wasn't the place where Wizard was, the problems with third edition Wizard were going to be
solved.
Like, because the answer isn't really fuck with Wizards. It's not just, like, if you're, how do you balance Wizards in third edition? It shouldn't be like, pull their pants down and put cream on their bottoms. It's going to be more like, you know, rebuild the class.
Yeah, the other thing is, in Snarf Quest, spellcasters were pretty much across the board bad guys. Like, yeah. They weren't PCs because Snarf Quest was also essentially of the same mindset that D&D is, which is, oh, spellcasters get to do whatever and they're unfair, which means the only way they can show up in a game is as a villain, because then it means something when you beat them.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a couple races you can play as.
Yep. Oh, I forgot there's a prestige class as well.
Oh, right. The Order of the First Order of the Robots or whatever.
Yeah, you can be Knight of the Order of the Robot, because at some point the robot that the Snarf finds convinces Penelope that, like, that's a cool thing, that instead of...
He does it by saying fashion, and she goes, fashion? Why, that's the only thing I care about, far out dude bro.
And he's like, oh, I can't marry you because I am a robot. I do not sleep. I do not eat.
Yeah.
And so then they thought, like, oh, this is a knightly code,
mm-hmm.
to, like, I can't wed anyone, and I have food as little as possible, and I sleep as little as possible. Also, I go bleep.
Yes. Now, the problem with this class as a prestige class is that all of the bonuses it gives you are just resistance bonuses. It's like, oh,
it's all just stuff so you don't fall asleep and you don't need to eat.
And it uses a non-existent D&D metric. So it'll be like, oh, your character needs to eat half as much food as another character would need to eat. Well, there's no rule for how much food an OGL character has to eat.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much what it does is just give you, hey, you know the like great endurance feat? Great, you get better versions of that.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's I mean, I guess it's a neat idea to be like, hey, this is something that happened in the comic strip, here's a class based on it, but boy, it is just a nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, when you hit the 10th level, when you max out Knight of the Robot, you get a magic weapon.
Yeah, and you know what? Future advice to anyone still writing OGL games, don't put, and 5th edition stuff, don't put the only cool thing about your class on the capstone. Most people see that and go, I don't want to play for 19 levels of boring bullshit.
That, or they see that and go, oh, that's the thing I want, and then realize, after a few levels, that they're like, oh, I'm never going to see that.
Yeah, we're going to switch campaigns before it ever happens. If you think your capstone's super cool, see if it wouldn't also be super cool at 3rd level. Try that, okay, pals? Thank you.
Try that out. Try that on for size.
Just give it a shot.
We got a new skill, which is literacy, because being literate is not assumed in Snarf Quest.
It's a standard adding a supplement skill, which is, it's the supplement skill specialty, which is take something that's normal and then take it away from everyone and make them buy it again.
Yay.
We saw that back in fucking World of Tales from the Crypt, where all of a sudden computer used to cover everything and now there's also hacking you have to take.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We got new feats, which the 5 of them are just sort of, okay, great.
The feats don't seem to have all that much to do with the game. They seem to be just feats that the author of this book thought should exist.
There's,
like, they're capstones to chains from the original books.
Yeah, there's only one that even remotely has to do with Snarf Quest.
Yeah.
Because the rest of them are like, oh, you've got Deadshot, and you're better if you're right next to someone, and you can shoot around cover.
Yeah.
Here's a improved mounted combat, and improvised weapon, you can pick up a thing and you're +4 to hit with it now.
Yeah, instead of being -4 to hit with it. That's, I mean, it's just...
The only one that actually does anything is Fortune's Fool, which then extends the crit failure and crit success range to now be 1 and 2 is an auto failure, 19, 20 is an auto success.
I like that one as a comedic thing. It's kind of
a neat
idea.
Yeah, they're like, you're going to have more times where stuff goes real good or real bad.
Although, I'm going to put this out there, and I know we've said this one on the show before, comedy shouldn't be limited to a 5% chance, or in this case, a 10% chance.
Yeah.
If you want to see something funny happen on your attack, just do it. I hate how every joke about Dungeons & Dragons ever is like, and then I rolled a natural 20, and I did fuck that dragon. And you're like, if it's funny, just fuck the dragon anyway. You don't need to...
Look, just ask the dragon's consent.
Yeah. Not every story needs to start with a lie. You can just be like, we had a good time when I fucked a dragon.
It doesn't have to start with a lie. Just tell me you want to fuck a dragon.
Yeah. And you have to, look for yourself. Try and look up jokes about D&D on the internet sometime and see how many of them start with, and then I rolled a natural one.
Yeah. There's a lot of oopsie doodles. I automatically failed or succeeded, and we interpreted that in the dumbest way possible.
Yeah. Like, just, if you want to interpret things stupidly, do it anyway. You don't need to wait for a 5% chance to tell you it's okay.
I mean, I do like that because it might spark a creative moment where otherwise you wouldn't have thought of one.
I guess that's fair. That is true.
Because, you know, if you're like, oh, I'm swinging my weapon, and normally you'd be like, oh, I'm just swinging a weapon at him. But then you get some crit failure and you go, oh, you know, I described how I was swinging this way. I guess if I do this, then that would be a funny thing.
Yeah, I suppose that's fun. So, sure, why not? Now, there are 5 races to pick from in the game.
Yep.
They are the Almir, which are basically dragon fin-eared orc monsters that come in mean and nice, which are 2 of the races.
Yeah, the mean ones are pretty much half-orcs.
Yeah, yeah, they're more or less just half-orcs, like straight up half-orcs. Like, they get the exact same
stat
bonuses.
They get +2 strength, minus two intelligence, charisma.
Yeah.
Their favorite class is barbarian. And
there's a picture of the sample one, and his name is Krusk, and so on. Yeah, no, the nice ones are smaller so that they fit into the cartoon aesthetic of the universe. So they're just snarf sized.
Yeah.
There's one of them. His name's like Geeler or Geller or something, and he it's all based on him.
Yeah.
Like, now, up until he existed, he might have been the only nice Almir in the world.
Yeah. So they're -2 strength, +2 charisma if you're going to be a nice Almir.
Yeah.
They all have superior hearing because they've got those big weird dragon fin ears.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their shared +2 to listen checks. And then the mean Almirs get the worst thing, which is, ooh, as a full attack action, you can bite for a D4 plus strength.
I like the idea that you give up your full attack, which is the thing where you get more than one attack, to just bite someone for a little bit of damage.
Yeah.
Why are these playable?
And then
they're obviously just bad guys.
Oh, yeah. But at least the nice Almir is fleet-footed in that they can run 5 times normal move as a run.
Yes. Although, are they small size? I think one of the race. I thought they were the one race that was small size.
I mean, there's a couple small sized races.
Okay, but anyway, they are their favorite race or class is sorcerer, because that's the one that would make sense for a charisma guy.
Yeah, he does give, outside of the new races, he does sort of say, like, oh, what are dwarves like in this setting? What are elves like?
I love that, because you can tell he doesn't give a shit, because they weren't in his book really.
So yeah, he's like, halflings, they're around and they got food, whatever, I don't care, moving on.
He's like, halflings, there weren't halflings in the comic strip, I guess they're living in little towns near the base of the Red Mountains and they like food. And he's like, just say they're not in there, dude. No, you're not hurting it. There's enough little tiny cartoon dudes.
Other new ones, we get the Pelfric, which are bird looking guys, but instead of feathers they have fur, and they are very angry if you say they're birds. Except the one is named BB Bird.
Because all of them who are from Bird City are named birds, and Bird City is the biggest city for these people.
Yeah.
This guy is, like, I feel like you really needed to read the couple of strips, and we don't have access to them, that he was in to get a read on what the hell they're talking about. The Pelfrics are what they call, are what they're called. They get a horrible stat array. They get +2 constitution, -2 wisdom?
-2 strength.
So, okay, yeah. And their favorite class is Bard.
Which
doesn't
okay.
make it. They never leave their villages. This guy's a weirdo because he does.
Yeah. They get a +2 to spot and search checks because they got good vision, and that's basically it.
Yeah. And then he explains away why the one guy who's like, I'm not a bird, damn it, even though his name is BB Bird, he's from Bird Village.
Everyone from a village has a special name that they'll never tell anyone outside of it, and so they'll just use the initials for it.
Mm-hmm.
So his real name is BB, and that stands for 2 different words, but then they'll just say their village name as their last name. So he's BB Bird.
Yeah, and all of them work that way, although as far as I can tell, he's the only one that you ever encounter, because he's just, it's just like when we read that Wizards RPG, and they were like, oh, you know that one weird, stupid thing they put in the background of one shot for no reason? Here's stats for it.
Yeah, it exists.
There are a bunch of them, I guess.
Yeah, they're out there. Find them.
Yeah. As far as I can tell, the only image we get of this dude in the entire book is on his character page.
or on this race page, and he seems to be breaking the fourth wall and dressing like a Elmer Leonard detective novel.
It's because that shows up in the very back comic of the book.
Oh, okay.
He does a fourth wall breaking comic back there, and he just pulled the panel of that and put it here.
Ah, all right, yeah. I guess I didn't stay for the end credits.
No. Trummels.
Oh, boy, Trummels are the worst. Trummels
are
the
natural greedy.
They're naturally greedy. No one likes them. They keep getting kicked out of everywhere they go.
They're good-natured, and they try to make friends, but everyone's like, but they're kleptomaniacs, so he put Kender in his game.
He put Kender in. They don't understand property, and so they will steal from everyone all the time.
And a common characteristic of Trummels is their low intelligence and overconfidence.
Now, let's keep in mind that he says that they're low intelligence and they are very confident, but their stats don't reflect either of those things?
No, their stats are +2 dexterity and then -2 constitution and -2 strength.
Yeah.
They have the worst stat array,
uh-huh.
And none of it has to do with intelligence.
Yeah, or charisma, you'd think, because they're always overconfident.
Yep, nope.
Nope, they're dexterous but weak in multiple ways. They're supposed to just be furry Zitva.
Yeah, like
they're the same thing as Zitva.
They get a +2 to hide and move silently, and their favorite class is rogue. And they're just rogues.
Yeah, they're just little rogues who, and by the way, because they get a +2 dex and a -2 strength and con, you also get Larry Elmore popping up on this page with a picture of himself.
Oh, yeah.
For a little story where he's like, playing a weak character can be a good thing.
I think the key to a fun, humorous game is characters shouldn't be powerful. Powerful characters solve things too easily.
So this is an old school belief. This is the kind of person who has never played anything but D&D. You know what challenges powerful characters? Powerful challenges.
Oh my goodness.
That was a complicated answer. But yeah, the other thing about Trummels is that they, even though they're stupid, they speak 4 languages automatically. They speak more languages than anyone else, but they only speak single syllable. They speak like Orcish, Elven, Common, and Zitva. But all of, or Zephas speak common. Sorry. So they speak like 4 languages, but all of them are like, me go place now. Bye bye. The steal your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what they are.
They're a little dumb Kender.
Yeah.
And the last new race is the Zitva, of course.
Yeah. You got to be able to play as the Zitva.
They are a +2 dex, -2 strength. So
just better Trummels.
Just better at being that. They get a +2 to listen checks because they also have large ears.
Mm hmm.
They have a +2 to spot checks related to sense of smell because they have huge snouts.
Yep.
And their favorite class is fighter for some reason.
Because Snarf exists.
And I guess.
Snarf is basically... it's because Elmore... I'm not going to blame this guy like directly by name this much. I feel like a lot of people who design old D&D games assume that fighter is the default class you give to anybody who is not anything else.
Lol.
Like, if someone's not anything, because that dork guy is clearly a fighter as well, and his whole thing is, he's bad at everything, so he picked up a spear and became a fighter.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the example you need to get to where that is. If you're not anything, at least you're a fighter.
Yeah. It goes on to talk about magic in the setting.
Mm-hmm, there's one new spell because of one of the characters in the comic strip.
I kind of hate this spell, but whatever. It is a level 5 spell for either sorcerer, wizard, or bard.
Mm-hmm.
It is duration 1 week per level, will save throw, causes a designated creature to believe it is a completely different type of creature. Identity Crisis can be cast on any staggered or unconscious creature. It has no effect if cast upon a conscious creature with 1 or more hit points. So you have to either knock someone out or wait until they're sleeping,
mm-hmm.
and then you can change what they think they are.
Yeah, because there's a character in the comic strip, a recurring dragon character, whose real name is like Vero Sithrax or something, but he thinks he's named Willy, and he thinks he's a duck.
Yes.
And now, keep in mind that the code word to get someone out of the species that they think they are is you just say the species they actually are.
Yeah, so if I go find a sleeping orc and I go, you're a hamster now,
mm-hmm.
then the orc is going to act like a hamster until someone says orc.
But he's going to do it comedically. He'll be like, me hamster, me want drink from hanging upside down water bottle and run on thing.
Who has pellets for me?
Yeah, instead of, you know, acting like a hamster.
Yeah.
They're just going to walk around saying hamster business.
Yes.
Me want do dance on early internet.
Yeah. That's what you're going to get out of it.
Yeah. Which, you know, that part's kind of funny, sure. In the comic strip, there's this dragon character who thinks he's a duck. So Snarf gets his treasure and leaves, and then traps the people who were going to come in behind him by yelling dragon, dragon, dragon at the dragon, so he remembers he's a dragon.
Yeah, and then he blows up all of the people who are chasing after him, which is the example in the book for if your players have a cool, fun idea, let it work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that is cool. But then he shows up again later still thinking he's a duck.
Because the tower he was in blew up and he got knocked silly to the point where now instead of it being a spell, he just has amnesia and thinks he's a duck.
But this is the part where I was kind of like, oh, I'm mad at this world building, because he was like, well, then how come you're acting so mean? Well, they told me I had to act like a bad dragon and I'd scare everyone away like a dragon would, you know, like a dragon. And you're like, weren't they saying the code word over and over again?
That's because it's not a spell anymore. He was brain damaged.
Oh, okay. That's the difference.
Yes.
All right. So now he just permanently thinks he's a duck.
Yeah, because of the explosion, he has brain damage and thinks he's a duck forever.
Okay, that's fair.
We have new magic item like bikini armor.
Oh, right. Bikini armor is equal opportunity, at least. It basically says that the world of Snarf Quest doesn't really see a lot of heavy armor wearing. It's a bonus. It lets you use your charisma bonus as an armor modifier and otherwise acts as studded leather.
You get a plus one distraction bonus for either each plus one or minus one for your charisma.
Yes.
So you're getting more AC if you're ugly and in bikini armor, because no one wants to see that.
And then it has at the end, it's like, imagine Dork running around in a thong.
Oh, gosh.
No one likes to see man butts. I think that's why I understand women so well.
We get a couple anachronistic things like a motorcycle.
Yeah, there's just the magic item is just a flashlight.
A pistol.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, more cribbing from wizards.
Which, oh my god. The pistol is a major item in the comic strip.
Yes.
Like, it's how he manages to beat, like, two different wizards, and also at the very end how he beats a dragon.
Yes.
In order to use the pistol, you have to have exotic weapon proficiency pistol. The damage is 2d6. And it's got a crit range of 19 to 20.
Yeah. This is the problem with taking joke items and turning them into actual stats.
I'm like, oh.
In the comic strip, he legitimately, the first time he uses it, he just misses because he doesn't know how to use pistols. And luckily, at the exact same time, the character he was shooting at died from something else.
Yeah, there's a weird little death leech that killed a guy when he shot at him.
Yeah. So at the very end, he manages to kill a dragon with it because the dragon leans his forehead or her forehead up against the gun.
He's like, oh, take a look in here. There's a key to a great treasure. And then he shoots her twice,
yeah.
Which means he did 4d6 damage and that instantly killed that dragon.
Well, yeah, but she had her head right next to it. It's probably a coup de grace attempt. This is the problem with putting rules on your jokes.
Yep. We get a ring of wishing and a wand of wishing, because those both show up.
The wand of wishing specifically can only be used by one of the sexy babe sorcerers that's in the actual universe.
Yep.
If Itia does not have this, it doesn't do anything. And the ring of wishing has one wish, because that's what the one in the thing was.
Yep. And there's a wind-splitting sword, which is a magic sword that you can use to try and deflect spells.
Yeah, it's
which is at least one of the interesting magic items they put in here instead of just joke.
Yeah, and it's convoluted how it works, but you can use it to deflect spells, and it's the signature sword of Snarf's hot twice his height human wife.
Yes.
Tellery Windy Arm, who by the way was, she called herself Tellery Windy Arm because she could use her sword to wind away spells, but apparently the sword was doing it, so any notion that she might have been competent should be set aside.
Yep, and then we just get stats for the various things that were in the background. So we get
like the
gaggle zoomers and dark shade death leeches and giant mountain giants and
Wazat lizards,
fucking grab gobblers.
Yeah, all of these things. This is just like the wizards book that we did a long time ago, where it's like, oh, there's like this sort of badger monster in the first two pages of the thing. Here's the stats for them as a species.
Yeah,
they're all like that one.
Yeah, you get that, and then you get the stats for the actual characters.
Yeah.
So you get the NPC stats.
Yeah. So there you have it. That's
Snarf Quest.
That's Snarf Quest. John, what would you say was your favorite thing about Snarf Quest? That sounded like it was going to be a rough... People are going to think I cut stuff out there. I didn't. I just know we've been talking for way too long.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say probably the best thing in Snarf Quest is...
All those snarfs.
So
I like the questing.
Many snarfs. I mean... I would say very specifically the advice to let your players get away with things if it seems interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good rule to go by in your games.
Yeah, that's fair.
If someone does something cool, don't be like, all right, now roll and it's an impossible roll to make. Just be like, oh, that's rad and I want that to happen in my game, so it happens in my game.
Yeah, no, I have always remember that always brings up a memory for me of when my first character I ever played was like this wizard in some guy's D&D campaign. Well, first D&D character. And he got tied up by fairies at one point, and I was like, oh, it looks like Enlarge doesn't have a somatic waving your arms around somatic component. I'll cast Enlarge, so I break out of the ropes. And he goes, well, that was stupid. You get cut into pepperoni shaped ribbons, you idiot. You die. And I was like, oh, all right. I'm sorry. I won't try things.
Okay. Well, I'll stop being creative now. I'm sorry.
My bad. Sorry.
Yeah. So that's my favorite thing. That particular bit of advice.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing in Snarf Quest?
The actual comic that's in there?
Sure. You want to take like the 8 pages of actual comic that are in here?
Yeah, the 8 pages. Now that I know there's more in the back, I'm going to go read that too. I stopped when I hit the NPCs. I was like, I don't need to know their stats. That's not going to come up on the show. Snarf Quest, the comic strip, is great. It's inventive. It's fun. I don't like the dialect stuff so much, but everything else about it is the art is fantastic. It's good slapstick D&D style comedy. I liked it.
There you go.
What was your least favorite thing?
Oh, God. I think the worst thing in this book, like, I want to say the noble.
The nobles weren't bad, but there's also the...
But honestly, that entire lady sidebar is just... What are you doing?
Why did you do this?
Honestly, almost every, like, I drew myself in here sidebar is just not great.
but that one
is the most egregious.
Yeah. Like I said, nothing would have been preferable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the ultimate preferability would have been to go back into the 80s and add some 80s type ladies with personality and instead of just bosom models running around, just put some cool care. I mean, this is 81. Dark Crystal existed already. We knew Agra was a badass. You could put stuff like that in your comic strip if you wanted. We know you could put a little monster in there that people still don't hate.
Yeah.
But instead, not only did he not do that, but then he came along later and he was like, it's because I love women.
It's just I respect them too much to not make them all hot.
I respect them too much to actually portray them in any way.
What is your least favorite thing in the book?
I mean, it's pretty much also that. I mean,
if you want to pick something else, that's fine.
I will pick something else. I'll say the kind of just the general lack of interest in the OGL half of this book is really bad.
It is amazing how much he was just like, oh, I guess I gotta put something in here.
I almost wonder if he shotgunned someone else in to write that.
He's like, hey, write me like a class.
Because the feats in particular, like, oh, improved mounted combat. I'm like, when does that come up? There's maybe two scenes in the entire thing where anyone fights on the back of a horse. One of them is defeated by a bee that gets stuck in his helmet, and the other one runs into a wall.
Yeah, it was a weird choice for the things they did, because, like, the Deadshot and the improved mounted combat and things like that, I'm like, this doesn't seem very snarfy. I guess you're doing Deadshot because Snarf shot a dragon in the face, but the whole point of the feat is that you can ignore cover, and I'm like,
That didn't have any cover. Yeah, and then the Trummel in particular was a problem because it was like, these are stupid idiots. No intelligence change. They're super overconfident. No charisma change. I'm like, that's what stats are for. That's what they're for. There you go. That's my least favorite thing. And yeah, the noble class is hot, sweaty garbage on a beach being eaten by a seagull. It was. I mean, sure, it's a joke class, but no one's going to pick it, so why put it in there?
Yeah. So there you go.
Like, you should just be like, oh, also, you can play to noble if you want. Don't gain class levels.
Also, you have to pick Noble as your level one class or else you can never pick it.
Yeah. Oh, and the house rules are also pretty bad. Most of the house rules are like, you know, make your game wackier in the following way.
Yeah.
So, and at least one of them is anything your characters say, they have to do as a player now.
Yeah. No, that's bad.
It's a bad house rule.
So there you go.
There you go. That's the end of Snarf Quest.
Hey, would you play Snarf Quest, Jeff?
No, not really. I mean, it's OGL. I'm not actively seeking to play that many OGL games anyway.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, one might rise above the rest and be interesting enough that I'd say, sure. Like, the superhero ones are kind of like, wow, you really reached to create this.
Yeah.
I like the more tortured OGL books. The ones where, like, well, we have to use these rules. Let's just bend the fuck out of them.
Oh, yeah. Watching someone try their hardest to be like, I am going to fit this square peg in that round hole. Just you watch me.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. This is like, I guess there's a spell. Whatever.
This was like, oh, is there a round hole I have to fit something through? That's fine. I've got this pin.
Dink.
There we go. Bare minimum. So, no, I wouldn't play this. Would you?
No. I mean, even if I wanted to play an OGL game, I honestly don't want to play in a comedy game.
Yeah.
Like, I'll play in a game where we are allowed to be comedic, but I don't want to play in a game that is comedic because then you're forcing it, and I hate that.
Yeah, nothing's funnier or not funnier. One thing's less funny.
Nothing is funny.
Nothing
period.
Is funny, period. End of statement.
Full stop. We are not funny.
No one has ever been funny.
Except for Doug.
Except for Doug Funny, who was funny by name. And ostensibly his...
He was funny by nature.
His cool older sister was also funny.
Nah.
Well, her name was Judy Funny.
Nah.
All right. Well, anyway, you know, there is an OGL game that I am excited about, John.
What's that?
Why, it's WWE Know Your Role.
Why would you be excited about that game?
Because we're less than a month out from reviewing it live at Gen Con.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so if
Ugh.
Oh, man, I'm so bad at doing ad copy. we've got a couple shows at Gen Con that you can come and see us at. There's our live episode that we're going to review with questions from the audience. And this year, I think we might have given ourselves enough time to try and do the bonus content on the air, too. There will be a special guest, an actual new professional wrestler. Good for him, our friend Jim McClure. And we are reviewing WWE Know Your Role, a OGL game that really tortures the OGL system to create a wrestling game.
Yay.
I've started reading it now, and it is bazonkers. So I can't wait to talk to you guys about it. And the other thing we're doing is Quizdom Mastery. That's going to be a fun one. We are going to be doing an old school panel style quiz event with the panelists from our illustrious One Shot Podcast Network competing to answer stupidly difficult questions in whatever way they can.
Yes, indeed.
So that one in particular is important to us because all the ticket sale proceeds are going to go directly to Trans Lifeline. So please, it's only $2. Buy a ticket and come see the show if you're going to be at Gen Con.
I mean, hell, buy a ticket and just support the cause, even if you're not going
to
be there.
That's fine. So just wanted to let you know that that exists. Otherwise, go to patreon.com/systemmastery and support us. Why don't you?
Why don't you?
Yeah.
Why don't you come up and support me sometime?
Give me one good reason why you shouldn't. Oh, because you don't have any money? Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
That is a good reason.
It's a good reason. I completely understand that reason.
Oh, because you don't like us and you hate listening to us? Oh, okay.
No, that's not good enough. Hate listeners need to pay extra.
Hate listeners is a dollar more.
Yeah, if you're hate listening to the show, then you should support us because there's more things to hate.
Yeah, yeah, the more you support us, the more content we will put out that you can get pissed off about on, I don't know, EN World or RPG Net or
That's
something.
That's right. Support us for a single dollar and you unlock bonus content where we make characters in the game we just reviewed. So yes, we're going to go make some Snarf Quest guys right now.
Obviously.
That's what we do. We've been doing it for years. Thank you so much for listening. I've been Jeff. That's been John. And until we see you in 2 weeks with yet more content, I hope you have a good week.